that, well, you know, you need to be showing support in the poll before we include you in the debate. It's a catch-22. How do you do center in the polling unless you have media exposure?
That was Rich Whitney, Illinois Green Party candidate for governor in 2010. Apparently, whether we have a democracy or not is a battle decided on a case-by-case basis. One such battle was that of whether third-party candidates would be allowed in the only two televised gubernatorial debates in Chicago of the 2010 election. Candidates Lex Green, Rich Whitney, and Scott Lee Cohen were on the ballot but excluded from the debates sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Illinois and the City Club of Chicago. I researched the League's policy for inclusion in their debate on October 20, 2010, and I uncovered some controversy. But first, one might ask why third parties are important to democracy. George Farah, founder and executive director of Open Debates, answers this in a 2008 Democracy Now! Interview about presidential debates.
There is no doubt that often the Republican-Democratic parties take positions, in large part due to the corporate interests that finance their campaigns, that are directly at odds with the opinions of either the majority of Americans or tens of millions of Americans. And these debates, which are designed to inform voters so they can make substantive decisions, should be airing the ideas that are supported by the vast majority of Americans that the two major parties are excluding. And historically, that is the role that third parties have played. Historically, it has been third parties, not the major parties, that have supported and are responsible for the abolition of slavery, woman suffrage, public schools, public power, unemployment compensation, minimum wage, child labor laws. The list goes on and on. The two parties fail to address a particular issue. A third party rises up and is supported by tens of millions of Americans, forcing the Republican-Democratic parties to co-opt that issue, or the third party rises and succeeds, which is why the Republican Party jumped from being a third party to being a major part of the United States of America. When you exclude third parties from the election process, third parties that the vast majority of Americans would like to see in the presidential debates, you're not only denying those people the right to choose who they want to run for president and who they want to vote for, but you're denying the very fundamental and critical issues that in a generative democracy we need to have aired in front of tens of millions of voters.
Turning back to the Chicago election for governor, other than being on the ballot and having evidence of running a formal campaign, the League's candidate participation policy requires that candidates poll at 10% or more, and the poll must be conducted within 5 days before the debate and 30 days before the election. The League, of course, considers this a reasonable policy. An abbreviated excerpt from their statement on the ABC 7 debates reads, "Our debate policy provides voters an opportunity to judge the positions, beliefs, and qualifications of candidates who have demonstrated a meaningful level of voter interest. That interest is gauged by voter response ascertained by professional nonpartisan pollsters." They go on to say, "The point of a general election debate isn't to provide a platform for parties and candidates who have failed to stimulate meaningful voter interest. These debates are not civics lessons. One of these candidates is going to be elected." Rich Whitney, however, considers this an arbitrary and exclusive policy.
That is so wrong on so many levels. We can start to count them, I guess. I mean, basically, relying on polls in the first place, well, you know, why even do that? That's putting the cart before the horse. That's probably my biggest single objection, is that this has it backwards. You know, you have to have media exposure so the voters know what you stand for. Then you might have a legitimate poll that might get a sense of, oh, now who do they favor? Secondly, there's a huge problem, though, with the polls themselves. Legitimate news organizations like AP that used to conduct polls where you had at least some faith in their numbers, they're no longer doing it anymore. Instead, you have organizations like the Rasmussen Group and the Chicago Tribune, and it's black box polling. They won't tell us what their methods are. We don't know who they're calling. We don't know how they're framing the question. We don't know, for example, are they telling the people who are they contact, do you choose Quinn, Brady, or other? And then only if the person answers other do they tell you, well, which other? As a matter of fact, I know of people who have contacted my campaign who said, you know what, I was contacted by a pollster, And I tried to tell them, I want to vote for Rich Whitney, the Green Party candidate, and they said, oh, we don't have that on here. Let me just add one other example, and that is that if, as some polling organizations have been known to do, they're calling home phone numbers, that in and of itself is biasing the results, because an ever-growing cohort of the population no longer uses home phone numbers. We're up to about 25% of the population now that relies exclusively on cell phones. So if they're calling home phone numbers, they're getting typically an older age breakdown in their pool. And then, of course, it has another bias, because I know from personal experience, a lot of people, even if they have a home phone, they don't answer it anymore. They let their answering machine answer it. So you're only getting basically the quote-unquote old-fashioned people who actually believe in answering their phone, their home phone, when you actually call it during the evening. So on so many levels, you know, we don't know how reliable these polls are. You cannot give them any credence. And to use that as the litmus test for who gets in the debates is just absolutely ludicrous and wrong and disrespectful of the voters of the state of Illinois.
Okay. And do you think that all of these criticisms of the use of these polls, the potential unreliability of these polls, based upon the fact that they are not transparent, do you think that these types of problems are obvious to those who would make the decision about the litmus test for whether candidates are allowed in a debate? And keep in mind that there are two parties in that decision. One party is the membership of, for example, the League of Women Voters, and the other party is the leadership of that organization. Do you think that it's obvious to the membership, and do you think that it's obvious to the leadership?
Well, I know it's obvious to the leadership because we you know, put it right under their nose. The same type of critique of public opinion polling that I just mentioned. Believe me, we had lots of supporters of this campaign contacting the league leadership and letting them know how we felt. So I think they knew perfectly well what they were doing in relying on this illegitimate and, again, highly arbitrary and frankly irrational litmus test for deciding who gets into the debate. As far as the membership of the league, of course, that's going to be, you know, a little bit disparate, and there's no way of knowing that for certain. But I would say that, you know, just based on the people that have contacted our campaign and said, you know, I'm a member of the league, this is ridiculous, that sort of thing, we do know that there has been some very broad sentiment coming from league members that basically is telling us that, you know, their own leadership made a very bad decision here. When all you hear are the same two people spouting the same corporatist agenda, masked by, faux debates over peripheral issues or mainly attacking each other, well, no wonder people are sick of politics. You know, one of the arguments I frankly try to make to the folks over at ABC is, look, you know, talk to the league, include me in debates. It'll be better for your ratings, quite honestly. So I try to even appeal to the bottom line, but they still played their own institutional role and said, you know, basically, well, you know, it's the league's call. We have to go along with it.
We used to have a fantastic, genuinely nonpartisan presidential debate sponsor, the League of Women Voters. From 1976 until 1984, the League of Women Voters hosted our most important public forums, and they made sure the debates served the public interest rather than the interest of any political party, and they had the guts to stand up to the two major parties. In 1980, for example, former Republican Congressman John Anderson ran as an independent for the President of the United States. President Jimmy Carter adamantly refused to debate him, but the League said, you know what, Mr. President, too bad, and they hosted a presidential debate between Ronald Reagan and John Anderson that was watched by over 40 million people. Fast forward 4 years later, the Walter Mondale and Ronald Reagan campaigns actually vetoed 68 of the moderators that the League of Women Voters had proposed for the three debates. What did the League do? They issued a scathing public press release castigating the candidates for abusing the process, and the Reagan and Mondale campaigns were forced to accept aggressive moderators. again 4 years later, the League of Women Voters were refusing to implement any contract that was negotiated by the George Bush and Dukakis campaigns. They had negotiated the first secret contract, a 12-page memorandum of understanding that dictated who would participate and how the format would be structured. The League said this is an outrage.
You mean that was longer than the initial proposal for the $700 billion bailout?
9 pages longer. And they absolutely refused to implement the contract. Well, guess what? The parties did not like the fact that an uppity women's organization, pro-democracy, was telling their boys who could participate in their debates and under what condition. And so in 1987, they created this private corporation called the Commission on Presidential Debates. It sounds like a government agency. It's not. And every 4 years, it awards absolute control to the Republican and Democratic parties over our political forums.
Matt Irvin, campaign manager for Libertarian Lex Green, and George Milkowski, a donor to League of Women Voters of Illinois, both consider the League's decision to be partisan in nature. According to Rich Whitney's website, an ally has filed complaints with the IRS over partisan political activity by the nonprofit organizations involved. Also, Lee Allen Jones, the Green Party candidate for senator, and Rich Whitney have filed suit in federal court against WTTW and its affiliates. They allege that WTTW used taxpayer dollars and the public airwaves to promote the Democratic and Republican candidates at the expense of the other legally established and recognized parties in Illinois.
Really, you know, obviously it's going to affect the outcome because, like it or not, there is a certain percentage of the voting population that does not take the time to do their homework and look at all the candidates. And if all they're seeing is the superficial stuff on TV, the attack ads, and then maybe they tune into this debate, oh, it's Quinn versus Brady. You know, these are the two legitimate candidates, quote unquote. So we got to decide between these two which one is the lesser evil. And you're back in the same situation again. So, yes, this is very bad for our government and on so many levels to exclude a person like me from the debate. But I do have to respectfully take issue with you in one respect. I don't like the term third party or minor party or anything like that for a reason. I understand why you say that. It's common parlance. But if you think of what a party is supposed to be a political association of people united by a common purpose to fight for what they believe government should be doing. Really, we're the first party, because what masquerades as a political party, the Democratic and Republican parties, can we really say it's an association of people or citizens that have come together to because they're united by a common purpose? I don't think so. I think what we're seeing are basically two rival gangs competing for the same pool of corporate money, typically getting donations from the same cast of characters, Goldman Sachs, Ameren CIPS here in Illinois. I mean, you go down the list of the same corporate paymasters and banking interests, and really that's what they are. Sure, there's citizens that get involved in them, and sure, they do differ on some issues and put on a good show over a few things, but basically they're following the same corporate agenda. That's why whenever the Democrats are in power, the best progressive ideas never really get adopted. And whenever the Republicans are in power, the best conservative ideas never get adopted. They put on a show. They basically are following the same agenda. And this is why things continue to get worse. It's the two corporate-sponsored parties, what we're really dealing with. They're not real legitimate political parties in the sense that we ought to be thinking of them.
Concerned citizens should listen to the full Democracy Now! Interview with George Farah on October 2, 2008, and visit opendebates.org and get involved in solving these problems. By the way, thank you to Democracy Now! For permission to use excerpts of that interview in a derivative work, despite its license of Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Non-Derivative 3.0 Unported. And thank you for listening. This has been David Kennedy with Chicago Indie Media.